What is up, everyone? This is Burnt Out Coffee. You know, the little podcast in the corner that if you look through the shadows, you'll see us behind the garbage can, in the mouse hole, all the way in the back, chilling with Jerry. I forgot every other rat creature ever existed in fiction.
Chucky.
Cug Crash. Chucky?
Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese. I legitimately went to the doll first and foremost. I was like, what? The murderous doll is a rat?
No, the rat that might be going out of business this year.
Oh, God. That's so fucked.
When I'm driving on the highway, all I see is, please come here. We have $5 pizza.
Their pizza is actually pretty. Every time I've went as an adult, it's been for either a cousin's birthday or mainly your son's birthday when you were able to make it those few times in Texas. Mm-hmm. That's the only time I've ever been back to Chuck E. Cheese's. Oh, by the way, I'm Enrique Rosado at Ryder Rosado. With me is the fantastic Jerry Rat. You see, smooth transition. Jerry Rat.
Oh, I like being the Puerto Rican bean. Anyway, so Oscar Fernandez.
My little Puerto Rican coffee bean.
At Oscar Fots.
Boom. And all I was going to say with that is their pizza was actually pretty dope. Every time I went, I was like, or I was just starving, which is very true. Each time I went, you would not give me a heads up. You wouldn't be like, hey, Enrique, we're planning a little celebration for my son. Or like, hey, we just wanted to take my son here. Do you mind coming? We're going to be around there at 3:00. It's, hey, Enrique, we've been here for 20 minutes. Where are you? Where am I for what? Chuck E. Cheese. Ricky. You guys are Chuck E. Cheese? Did I forget to tell you? Come to Chuck E. Cheese.
Ricky, to be fair, though, you're always starving.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a joke, but I was like, nah, yeah, that's true. I'm hungry a lot of the time because I'm always expelling.
Literally,
energy.
Your brother's response to any time I ask him to eat, huh? I can eat.
That's my response. It's almost like Oscar. It's almost like I don't like just one breakfast. I like a second breakfast. Smooth segue into today's.
Wow.
See, that's how you do a smooth segue.
Wow.
Into today's big thing. If you saw the thumbnail and read the title, you already know what it is. But it's another, does it hold up? Does this show hold up? Ask us how you feel about, like, let us know down below how you feel about this kind of like style we're doing. We're testing it out for a few, trying to get like it nice and smooth and squeaky clean. Instead of testing it privately behind doing a few episodes before we bring it to you, we're just basically alpha testing this in front of everyone and going, how do you feel?
That's how we do everything.
That's how it has to be done.
You know what, though? Next time, put the movie or show, and we do something entirely different.
Okay, so, like, I'd be like, does it hold up Futurama? And it's us talking about the one time I got in an accident and the other time you locked yourself out of your house.
Well, not that extreme. Instead of Futurama, we just do Simpsons.
Oh, okay. Okay, I took it the wrong way. But today's does it hold up is The Hobbit. No, not the Martin Freeman Hobbit. No, not the Peter Jackson Hobbit. We're taking it back all the way to the 70s, or was it 80s? Oscar has that information. And with that, oh my God, a second smooth segue, Oscar.
It was actually a bad year to come out with a Hobbit film.
There's a good year?
Yeah, any year but this year.
Okay.
Because the year is 1977, the same year Star Wars came out. So no one gave a fuck about The Hobbit.
What? You're telling... Well, they're both about short people going on a magical quest.
Aren't you a little short to be a stormtrooper?
Aren't you a little fat to be a hobbit?
Wow, I'm the right amount of roundness for a hobbit.
I'm the round one. What are you talking about?
I didn't mean personally. I was talking about Bilbo.
Okay, I was like, I'm round.
Like, slow your roll, Thorin, all right? I'm just the right amount of round. So the movie came out in 1977. And funny thing was, it almost won a Hugo and a Peabody, but lost to Star Wars.
What?
Yeah. For like, I think it was like a script, I think it was it teleplay or something like that? Yeah, it lost to Star Wars. But, so the funny thing is, like, just a quick little few things about the film before we get into it, because I want to talk a lot about this, because I didn't remember it at all.
Same.
And I've personally read The Hobbit in full at least 3 times.
Oh, wow. That's, I've never read it.
Yeah, it is. It is one of my favorite novels ever.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's for very simple reasons, but we'll get into that. It was directed by Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass. And this duo is literally your Christmas childhood. They were in, like, pretty much...
Yeah, I know those names.
They were responsible for pretty much all the Claymation Christmas movies.
I could tell just by watching it. Oh, God, that explains a lot.
Yep, all of them. They did them all. And also, they did The Last Unicorn.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, kind of in the same vein, but it was a different animation. But yeah, so... the one thing that really stood out to me, just as far as like little background facts, and then we'll get into the film. There's two things. One was the music, and the main song, you know, "Going on an Adventure," da 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 da, is by Glenn Yarbrough, and he has that voice, and the entire time he was singing, like that folky kind of like, you know, music he was doing, all I could think of was freaking South Park in the Lemmywinks episode that they're making fun of this film.
Wow.
And I could just see like Lemmywinks, Lemmywinks, la da da. Like he has like this weird like trembling voice, like ah, like that freaking, like, it's eerie, honestly. It's a little terrifying.
Bilbo Baggins.
Like, I was just like, oh God.
you even said, oh God, like him. Oh God.
Yeah, like it was slightly disturbing, but I understand for the time. You know, it's the late 70s. It was kind of folky, and it did fit the movie, so I didn't hate it. But all I could think of was Lemmywinks, because I've seen that South Park 100 more times than I've seen this movie.
God, I love the South Park movie.
Yeah.
I love South Park.
But one thing I did like, just to keep it with the music, this movie used pretty much all the songs from the book. People don't realize how many songs Tolkien wrote in that book. Because he wrote it for kids. He wrote it for his own kids. Yeah. And, like, there's, like, everyone sings. The goblins sing, the elves sing, everyone sings. And when you watch, like, Peter Jackson's Hobbit, like, the dwarves sing in the first film and that is it.
But it's two dope songs, especially that Misty Mountain song.
I'm just saying, there's like 100 more songs. And they were pretty much all used in this movie. And I was like, dang, okay, good job. One thing that is always skipped is Beorn, my favorite character, but we'll get into that. But another fun little fact, I was watching the film, and one thing that stood out to me was like, not the music, but the sound effects and like the choice of sound effects and like the way it would transition in certain scenes. And I'm like, why does this like just feel familiar? And that's because if you looked at the credits, everyone in charge of animation was Japanese. So I was like, let me look into this real quick. So the studio that, produced it was Topcraft Studios, Japan.
Yeah.
And the animation coordinator was Toru Hara. And the reason that's important is because he, Topcraft kind of dissolved and split into a few different companies in around 1985, but he continued to work on Thundercats and Silverhawks. And so,
for real?
Yeah, so there was that 80s vibe that I was feeling. Because I remember, you know, watching, you know, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, Silverhawks, especially those in particular. And I was just like, man, like, I could hear the same sound effects. I could, like, see the same animation. And because you got to realize, like, all this stuff was, like, animated in, like, Korea or Japan back in the day. And then it was sent back to America to get voice acting in English, and then sent back overseas, and they would get their own voice actors to do it. So it was like tossing a lot of hands around. Same thing with Transformers and all of those. And the cool thing about it was, so Topcraft Studios with Toru Hara dissolved, And
it's gone, yeah.
Half of the group left, and a young Miyazaki and the team made Studio Ghibli.
Mm-hmm. The three heads of, like, Studio Ghibli formed together.
Yep.
Suzuki and Takahata, if I'm right.
Yep. And Toruhara was in Pacific Animation, where he eventually made Thundercats and Silverhawks and a few others.
Mm-hmm.
And that got bought out by Walt Disney and became the Walt Disney Animation Japan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. And then Toru went back to his old team and became the first manager at Studio Ghibli.
Man, that's actually really cool. This movie has a tie to, like, some of the greatest animation.
Yeah, there was like some made. There was like some really good hands on this film. And, like, before we get into the story, because, like, obviously, The Hobbit is kind of fresh in people's minds as far as, you know, the Peter Jackson ones and whatnot. But, like, when you're looking at this film, like, the animation is beautiful. And, like, you can just look at the backgrounds and the people and you're like, this is all painted. These are all, like, watercolors in the background. This is gorgeous. And that was, like, the very first thing I noticed when this film started was, like, oh, my God. Like, you can see, like, the details in it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, like, one thing I really enjoyed, which is very funny, because, like, oh, before I want to preface what I'm going to say with, like, my stance, just in general, of, like, who are, like, because you are a person who's read the book three times. You are a Tolkien, like, man, fanatic. You enjoy this man's work. Like, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it is a literal, like, close second to Star Wars. Like, Star Wars, like, if honestly, if I was introduced to Middle Earth before Star Wars, that would probably be my fandom.
Yeah, that would, okay, so the only reason it's second to Star Wars is just Star Wars came out at the right time for you, which is ironic because both these movies, like you said, came out at the same time.
Yeah, but you know, like, like a kid growing up with 80s family members, like cousins, like I had like their Star Wars toys and the VHSs and all that. So like Star Wars was my mythos for the longest time. Yeah. And I wasn't introduced to Lord of the Rings until, what, I was like 12, 13 maybe?
No, yeah.
When the Lord of the Rings films came out?
Yeah, and like me, on the other hand, I'm not, like, I like his work a lot. I own the Blu-ray extended editions, director cuts of all Lord of the Rings. I enjoy the stories of him, but I'm not like a super avid fan. I love his work. I understand his impact on fantasy in general, and I think he, like, deserves his literary praise. But at the same time, I'm just like, you know, like, I just really enjoy it. I'm not as big as a fan of you. I haven't read The Hobbit. I haven't read Lord of the Rings.
Honestly, like, people are going to argue with me, and they're going to get mad at me, but I don't care. Like, without Tolkien, you don't get D&D.
You don't get a lot of the elements in D&D, yes.
Yeah, like,
because
like, Gary Gygax did amazing stuff, and he is the father of role-playing, but without Tolkien, who kind of brought that mythos back, because with Tolkien, he pretty much saw, like, the old, like, Celtic and English sort of lore was kind of by the wayside, and he wanted to bring that back. Like, literally, he wrote a whole book about this one guy just because he is mentioned once in, like, an ancient poem, but literally nothing is known about that character. But he knows that by the poem that this character had some great significance. And so, like, he used him in the Silmarillion and things like that in his world building for Middle Earth.
No, yeah. And, like, he deserves it all. So, but I'm just trying to show, like, we're coming from two different viewpoints of it.
Mm-hmm.
As in, like, you're a fan. Like, whereas last time, last week, I was like, man, I love Looney Tunes Back in Action as a kid. You're like, I've never seen this. I'm like, I love Tolkien's work, but I'm not a deep into the fandom as you are, where you know the minute details that build the world, where I'm just like a fan of what I've seen.
Oh yeah.
And that is to say, like, going to like the art comment you were gonna say, because I found it very funny what you said, because I went like, the animation, a lot of this was beautiful. The character designs for like the monsters, like Gollum, Smaug, I was like, these are breathtaking.
And you know what,
then we get to the dwarves, like, when we got to the dwarves, they were horrible. I saw, what was his name again? Thorn?
Thorin.
And I go like this. I want you to understand, my first introduction to The Hobbit was Peter Jackson's. So I'm imagining in Peter Jackson's these hot, ripped men. These dwarves work at Abercrombie and Finch Kids Edition. They're like, we wear the kids' clothes, but we got the pecs of a man. And then I see this wrinkled ass raisin with a beard come out going, I'm Thorn. And I went, oh my God, you are literally more lines than face. What is this monstrosity I saw? Like, the background is this beautifully elegant thing with beautiful monster character designs, and then you see this dwarf like, I'm the hero, and Gandalf, who looks like a wrinkled nut with so much hair.
You leave that unibrow alone. It was fierce.
It was so much. I was even like, Bilbo ain't pretty either.
Are you kidding? He had that perm on lock, man.
His perm was good, but dude had baggage, because the bags under his eyes weighed him down throughout the whole journey. Like, I was like, oh my God.
He hadn't had any sleep, man. This wizard came out of nowhere, and these dwarves.
Oh, don't get me started on the story.
Listen, so the thing is, like, so actually a lot of people did not like the art style that they chose for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it went against like Tolkien's work and things like that, like original, like,
because, oh, really?
Like, he kind of drew stuff a little bit, but it wasn't great. Mm. But like, I mean, like, even in the earlier stuff, the dwarves are still kind of funny looking, and they got little pointy hats and things like that, so it wasn't too far off. But you can look at it and be like, that isn't like traditional, like old school, like 80s, like Japanese animation. This was like, because one of the designers was American.
Yeah.
And so they decided to go with that art style, and I like it. It's very unique, and it feels European. It feels Dutch. When I think of, like, trolls and things like that, and, like, Norway and stuff like that, I think of that art style.
I will, yes, I agree with that 100%. Like, it looks like that, but I will still stand by, like I said, the animals and everything are good. Like, it's just the humanoids.
Yeah, they're ugly as shit. Yeah, I got you, man.
Ugly as horrible. And two, I couldn't tell who was who. I was like,
"You're not
are
supposed
you Thorn?"
Because they all, I don't know. Like, I think it was just colors. And that guy wasn't paying attention, because I don't remember, because, like, he gets really detailed, and all the doors are, they're like Power Rangers. They all have, like, color sets. And so, like, I don't remember fully, like, who was wearing what kind of cloak and hat and all the colors and things like that. So I didn't know if that was accurate, but that's pretty much how you had to do it in the film. All right, so Bomber's always wearing red and green, and Thorn's always wearing yellow and blue, and...
Yeah, but so I like. Wait, I'm ready to dissect this. I'll let you go first, because I know.
No. Because I'm gonna be sucking some dick. I want to hear your opinion first.
You're gonna be sucking. Are you sure you want me to go first?
I want you to go first, and I will counterpoint it.
Okay, that sounds perfect. So we'll go. I guess the best way to go through this is not give a recap of the film, but give like the moments where I did enjoy stuff and I didn't. Starting off easily, like you mentioned it earlier, the music, it was very like 80s, like early, like late 70s, early 80s kind of music.
It did feel a little dated. Yes.
It felt very like dated in my mind, but the Misty Mountain song, I still went, oh, that slaps. Do I like the Peter Jackson one more? Yes, but that's because it's a whole bunch of baritone men going, mm. I was like, ooh. I feel like I'm like being seduced by Peter Jackson, and in this one, I'm being sat down and read a storybook around children and feeling uncomfortable.
Feeling uncomfortable.
So, this movie moves at a pace, I would like to say, of a bullet train. Because
I mean, the movie was, I believe, 78 minutes long.
Yeah, it was like an hour and 10. Yeah.
And it is quite the adventure. So, yeah, I will agree with you that. And that is a big critique of the film.
Yeah. And like, to the point when people were like, how can they make The Hobbit 3 films? I can understand that point. But remember how, like, when it originally came out, Peter Jackson only wanted to do 2? I felt that would have been the perfect number. Because, like, watching this, I was like, they could have split this up in 2. And this would have worked so much better, because my problem was, like, my main problem could be summed up very well. So I didn't read the books. I understand my knowledge of the previous films, but every time we do this, I try to treat it like it's my first time. And I felt like, I was like, if I saw this just now, even as a kid, I would enjoy it as a kid. But now I feel personally that it moves at such a fast pace. I do not have enough time to develop a true relationship with the characters fully, because I feel like...
Well, there's only one person you need to develop a relationship, and that's Bilbo Baggins. The
whole
film is in the perspective of him. The book is in the perspective of him. It is his journey as the hero archetype.
Yeah.
But, like, so, like, that's the only person you need to focus on. There's a lot of dwarves. There's 13. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of side characters, and you meet a lot of different races. But mm-hmm. it's all about Bilbo's journey.
Mm-hmm. And I personally don't like Bilbo in this film.
Wow.
Because
he's so loving.
He's not loving.
Yeah, he
like
is.
Two moments that bother me, for example, is he's like, I'm going to go save the dwarf. Like, I'm going to try to, like, get the trolls meet. Second he gets caught by the trolls, he gets, like, free because they're like, oh, I don't want to eat you. Throw him to the ground. Go chase the dwarves. I'm like, okay, Bilbo is going to do something. Is he like, what's going to happen? When I see Gandalf appear, I'm like, he got Gandalf. That's what he did. And no, Gandalf just appeared and saved them. Bilbo was hiding in the treasure, in the caves, and then all he does is, yo, look, there's some treasure here. And they
listen,
go, good job, Bilbo.
Listen.
Bilbo, if you look at the cave, they're at the entrance. Literally, all they had to do was turn their heads to the left. They would have seen the treasure. But Bilbo gets praise.
Listen, like, it's like the first, like, it's like your level one D&D, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're with a party, and they're all, like, level freaking, like 5 through 10. And, like, it's your first adventure, you get caught, there's not much you can do, because they're big-ass trolls. So, like, you rolled a 20 in your investigation, you found some treasure hoard, okay?
He didn't roll a 20. He rolled a 5.
Listen.
And the DM just went, the difficulty of looking in this cave and not seeing this treasure is literally a 5.
Listen, he did something,
you made
okay?
It.
And he's in the beginning of the film, he's a coward, so, I mean, like, he's not going to be fighting anything, but he builds that up. And
that I do say that is true. Yes, he does have an arc because he does go confront Smaug himself.
And the thing is, like, what I liked about this film that stuck with the book is, like, in Peter Jackson's film, the dwarves are badasses. And in the book, it's literally the dwarves getting in, like, these really silly hijinxes and Bilbo
mm-hmm.
bailing them out.
Yeah, and I the reason I like them being more badasses more, they provide something. I know it's supposed to be in the journey of Bilbo, but if you have these 13 characters that mean nothing to the story, as you're describing, like, why have them? Also, real quick, Gandalf is is the worst person. He is, if we're sticking to D&D references, he's the dude who can't make the sessions on time because he's randomly like, yeah, like, there's literally a line, where did Gandalf go? He's a wizard, Bilbo. They just do that shit. They just go, peace, I got other things to do. I have work I couldn't call out. My bad.
Listen.
And leaves.
A wizard is never late, okay?
This man, this is the scene that made me go, like, I hate this guy. I remember as a kid when I saw this only once when I was a kid, and I went, I don't like that dude. And I remembered why. He's a teacher who doesn't show up. He's a teacher. He gave Bilbo fucking homework. He went, Bilbo, I'm leaving. Why? I don't need to tell you. Here's some paper. Here's a pen. Write down everything. And he literally, as I quote, I will review it and then tell you what you did wrong. Bye. I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
Listen, so he was doing important things, and you saw that in Peter Jackson's film.
In Peter Jackson, in this one, I don't.
Because he had to read the Silmarillion to learn about the White Council and the Necromancer and all that stuff.
But in the film, I don't get that. I get him going, you got homework. It's due Friday.
He explains in the book that, you know, he had to go south and join the
mm-hmm.
White Council and take care of a threat in the shadows. Oh,
that's dope.
He's doing wizard shit, but you know what? We're keeping the book simple. We gotta focus on this little rotund hobbit. The wizard shit is for the higher level stuff. You ain't there yet, Bilbo.
Exactly, and that's the thing. Like, that's why I'm saying I'm judging it off the film. I understand in the books they describe that, but just watching this film, they made Gandalf kind of... He just shows up and goes, hey, your name is Bilbo, right? You're not a burglar, but fuck it. join. He's like, why?
You know what? You know, honestly, I was thinking about it today in anticipation for this podcast. I'm going to say one thing. Mm-hmm. We might lose a few followers, but it's okay.
Go ahead.
Like, I saw I was thinking about it. This delves a little bit more in Lord of the Rings rather than The Hobbit, but they're both part of it. The mirroring of Gandalf and Jesus. And so a lot of comparisons have been made, especially in the follow-up of Lord of the Rings, you know, with his self-sacrifice and resurrection and all that good
stuff. Yeah, he's definitely he acts as a pseudo-Jesus for the book. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
And what the one thing they do have in common the most is, like both Gandalf and Jesus, they got, like, they're, like, one shot and done. Whatever magic they use, they never use it again. And I'm sitting there, like, watching the movie, and I'm like, man, they could get out of a lot of situations if Gandalf just did the freaking spell he did that one time.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
He would only do it once. And it was the same thing with Jesus. I'm like, listen, if you're in front of a Pilate, and you're like, brah, I'm the son of God. And he's like, nah, man, you're just a dude. You're like, just turn that water into wine once, and no one's going to argue with you, okay? All Gandalf had to do was that fire spell one more time, and they would have got out of that situation. But I'm just like they don't ever do the same spell ever again. Just like one shot and done. My spell slot is gone.
Exactly. And it's not even that. It's they suspect us to know so much. The goblins, the first time they meet the Goblin King, that is the perfect example of it. Literally, they go, is that the sword? That's the sword. I don't even know its name. I'm going to butcher it right now, Oscar.
Which one? You can correct me after.
He's like, Gandalf's sword. He's like, that's the sword of Zalavar Shaman.
No, it's Glamdring, the foe hammer.
Thank you. They're like, it's Glamdring, the foe hammer. Because, and I'm like, what the fuck is Glamdring, the foe hammer? And then he goes, no, he's going to do his thing. He swipes, and I will put a little asterisk. I understand that due to censorship, probably at the time, they're going to show straight death or something like that. So they did these, like, kind of like pseudo away with it. But he did this one thing, got rid of the king, and that, whoa. And I literally was there like, what the fuck just happened?
Now, okay, one thing I will agree with you in this film is, like, the weird transitions when they would slash someone. They literally slash someone, and there'd be, like, a weird, like, fade-in, fade-out kind of thing, transition. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, it was kind of off-putting visually. And I wish it was just more like a swipe and they would fall without any blood. Would have been better for me. But, no. So Glamdring and Okhrist are ancient swords used in the Goblin mm-hmm. Wars, and the elves used it to slaughter many goblins.
Oh, was that in the film?
Elrond talks about it, and the goblins obviously talk about it. So obviously, they're very memorable swords.
Is that in the film? Do they say, or do they just call it, this is the Goblin Slayer blade?
Okhrist is the Goblin Cleaver. So yes, they did call it the Goblin Slayer.
But what did he do? Because he wasn't near him. He did some magical blue blade shit, and then the Goblin King went down, and I was like...
Because it's a cool sword, and it did a cool swish, and it killed him.
This is the problem with the film, in my mind. They were trying to pack so much in such little time, because it's not even an hour and a half. Like you said, it's 78 minutes, that they go through. Like, when they get to the spider part, oh my god, so much happens so quick that I'm just like... He goes down, he wakes up, he's trapped by spiders, a spider comes, apparently he does one little baby stab, dead. He goes fight the other one, stab, dead. And I'm like, am I supposed to feel tension, fear for his life?
Yeah, they're giant spiders, Enrique. They're giant fucking spiders. Yes, you're supposed to feel fucking tension.
The movie didn't make me feel fucking tension, they ran through that shit. It's the equivalent of, like, Bilbo was level 1 when he fought the trolls, like you were saying for D&D. And then he became level 10 and was just like, swish, swash, swishity, dead.
I mean, you get XP for more than just killing, all right? He did some riddles and some, like, sneaking and some other shit.
The fucking riddles. I will say Gollum's design was, in my mind, I thought it was beautiful. I love the amphibian look to him. Yeah. I actually really enjoyed, like, the glazed blind eye. He looked scary. But if I'm correct... Peter Mayhews? Is that his name? No. The actor who plays Gollum. You know him better than I do. Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Peter Mayhews does Chewbacca.
Got him confused, sorry. Andy Serkis. I respect, not like just his portrayal, but literally the voice acting of him. so much because of this movie. Because I went, it's really hard to understand this Gollum. Whereas I'm like, but I think of like Andy Serkis and I can understand him clearly. I'm like, man, I wish we had that look with Andy Serkis's voice. Can't do wrong.
Yeah, I mean, like, I really like the design. Even later on, like, Smaug's design was very unique. It wasn't your traditional dragon. It was very feline in the face. Like, it was it was very different.
Now, Oscar, you said something you feel like that was gonna get you, like, everyone to hate you. I have something worse.
Okay.
So when I went to go see the original Hobbit, not the like the one we watched this time, the Hobbit of Peter Jackson's, let's just call it that.
Okay.
The second movie, The Desolation of Smaug.
Correct.
It was a midnight showing. I worked a double that day. I didn't get off until late. I couldn't take a nap or anything. I just got coffee, and we went to the midnight showing. Of course, as we know, the movie is 24 hours long. It's its own expedition. I fell asleep in the theater before they got to see Smaug, and I woke up to Bilbo fucking talking to Smaug, and I was just like, oh, we're here? What the fuck happened? And I was just like trying to piece everything together, and I was like, I'm an idiot. How did I fall asleep? I can't believe I fucked up so bad. When I watched this movie, Bilbo was running, like doing something, and then I opened my eyes, and then all of a sudden, Bilbo was talking to Smaug. I went, did I fucking do the exact same thing? And then I had to seriously debate, do I like The Hobbit? And the sad thing is, like, no, I really do. But I fell asleep in the same part in both movies. Again, granted, when I watched this one, I was on like 3 hours of sleep. Woke up early, did a whole bunch of work, and when I watched it, it was like midday.
So you keep giving me excuses of like how you're so tired. What I'm hearing is you're trash. All right.
I don't know. I'm saying Smaug apparently in both renditions has that soothe, silky voice. Benedict Cumberbatch and the dude who did this one, ooh, puts me to bed. And I legitimately just went, woke up and I was like, Bilbo, yes, fight. Yes, Bilbo's
the one. The one disappointing thing that they like to skip over is my boy Beorn. And so because it's like, honestly, from like a story aspect, it's like the easiest thing to cut. So when they're after the goblin tunnels and they're up in the trees and Thorundir and the other eagles come and pick up the gang and they fly to the edge of Mirkwood. That's not what happens in the book. Okay, they fly down I forgot the name of the stone. But anyway, they fly down to this like precipice of stones and they walk down and they make it to Beorn's cabin, where the shapeshifter Beorn takes care of them for a few days. Oh yeah,
he was in the Peter Jackson one.
Correct. And so like he has a role, and then he has a role in the final battle as well, and all that. So he's my favorite character in the book, and so they just completely cut his part out.
Yeah.
And another part that both movies cut out of the cartoon and Peter Jackson's was the dwarves when they're in Mirkwood and they're tripping balls. There's a deleted scene where Bomber actually drinks the water and like loses his mind, but that's a deleted scene. It wasn't in the theatrical version. And then, but there's a part in the book where like the elves are like luring them in. And so like, it'll be like pitch black. Like it's like almost like magic. Like it's pitch black and they'll hear the elves singing. And when they move towards the singing, they start to see lights, and then they see, like, the elves singing and dancing and feasting. And the moment they get close enough, boom, it's black again, and they're gone. So this happens, like, every other night until the point where they get captured.
Okay. Okay, yeah. That's actually an interesting thing. I would have liked to see that, but that would involve Oscar, them going, we need to keep the same 1 10-minute time. We're going to Just make it faster and faster.
Yeah, no, I got you. And so, like, those are, like, the two easiest things to cut, especially the Bayorn part. Like, they're there. Mm-hmm. I forgot they're there for a few days or a week or whatever. And, like, so, like, it's an easy part to cut. It's just like, oh, okay. So they were landed there, and then they go to Mirkwood. So we can just cut that part up and just put them in Mirkwood.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about, like, novels themselves. They're not restricted to a time limit, so it's just more of, like, how long do you want the book to be? And that's the beauty of you can put what you want.
Yeah, and The Hobbit's not a long book whatsoever.
No, yeah, I remember you showing me it. Like, it's an easy read. But there was actually one scene, if I'm correct, that was in this movie that I haven't seen in Peter Jackson's any of the films. And I actually appreciated it. The King of Eagles talked. He actually talked. Yeah. He went, it shocked me. I was waiting for Gandalf to go like, thank you for your sacrifice and all your help. And he just goes, and I was like, yes. I was waiting for that. And he just goes, Gandalf, you have saved me when I was younger in the Battle of... I went, what the fuck? Whoa. This bird don't got lips, but he can speak?
And both Gandalf and Thorondor both serve the god man way, so like they got like a little connection.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So they're work acquaintances. Remember that one time at the water cooler?
Yeah.
You let me cut in front of you? Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, that's... Like I say this, like, I know I'm, like, it sounds like I didn't like the film. It's just more of I'm very critical on it simply because I really wanted to enjoy it. And one thing that what you said in the facts, and I went, like, oh, my God, that explains a lot, is another thing people might hate me for. I actually don't, I like the characters. I like many future renditions of these characters from what I'm about to say. But the classic films, I do not like of the Christmas claymation ones. I feel the dialogue, the voice acting, and it's the same in all the films, especially the pacing, is extremely clunky. It's extremely clunky. I like the stories of them, but they're extremely clunky. And I felt that clunkiness in The Hobbit. Do you hate me or something? You're quiet.
That's what Bilbo Baggins hates.
Like, I don't know if is it just me or did it feel like kind of clunky? Like, transitions from scenes, like when Bilbo was in the cave sleeping, it shows him sleeping, and then it randomly goes to the song, and then he wakes up, he gives it 2 seconds of just pure silence, and then he goes, oh, that wasn't very nice.
I mean...
And then the fucking wall opens up. And I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Do you get what I mean? The clunkiness of it?
I guess so. I think they're kind of restricted. Because you're talking like around the same time they were coming out with like Nazca and the Valley of the Wind, which is smooth as hell.
It's super smooth. Smooth like butter. Like, there's no clunkiness.
And so...
And this one, I think it's their stylistic choice because it's in all of their films.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sorry, this isn't turning into that I loved it. I'm
no,
sorry.
No, you're fine. I was just thinking because, like, the,
oh, my God.
Like...
Sorry. Did I point out something you didn't realize or something?
No, it's not that. It's like the claymation ones are very clunky. Like, it's not enough frames per second, and they're like just like they look like weird. It doesn't feel natural. So, but yeah, and this one is not as bad. But I do see elements of it. So yeah, I guess I would kind of agree with you.
And it's not animation because I'm not talking about their animation movements. I'm talking about the pacing of their dialogue and the story in itself.
Yeah, I mean,
like the story moves so fast, but when they speak, it's like. Like, as if they're like, hold for 2 seconds, go, make sure you take spaces. It's like everyone's acting on the scale of William Shatner when they're like, Bill, Bo Baggins, I see you there wondering what I am doing. Over there. You know what I mean?
I'm just
saying. The only time I felt it was smooth was when Smaug and Bilbo spoke.
Like, I mean, they had to get a lot of story in, man. I'm sorry, okay?
But no, I'm talking about the pacing, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, the story moved fast, but the voices and the conversations and the minute actions, and again, not animation, of, like, them just progressing through it, felt like I can feel the gaps between them, but yet the story is sprinting behind it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
I'm sorry. We could talk about the things I liked about it.
Go fuck yourself.
The scene where Smaug is destroying the town was beautiful.
It was cool.
It was so cool. It was so cool, Oscar. Oh, I'm laughing so hard. Let me think of things that were cool. I actually really liked that scene, even though it moved clunky. That it took me out of it. I did like the scene where Bilbo went up on the trees and they gave it the scenery look. Which was, it actually makes sense because when you said Studio Ghibli worked on it, that's actually one of the trademark of their works, specifically Miyazaki. I don't know if he did this or if it's just maybe he got it from here or something.
Miyazaki wasn't one of the animators in this one.
Okay, he wasn't? Okay, then.
No, he was not.
It's just basically an animation technique. It's something Miyazaki himself utilizes a lot. And it's not even an animation. It is a film technique. It is where they give you a moment to breathe. And it's like these shots or these moments of either scenery or just like the quiet. And a perfect example for this film is when Bilbo climbs the trees. He looks up and he sees the butterflies. And like he takes a moment. And I actually really enjoyed that scene because in the movie of this clunky, fast-paced thing, it gave me a moment to appreciate what Bilbo was doing and what it means to him. And it gives me a moment as a viewer to just... Okay, I can get back into the film. I'm ready.
Yeah, and that's actually then, part of the book.
Yeah. Okay, good. I like that. But then when he started crying, I was just like, okay, Bilbo. Okay, Bilbo, they're butterflies. But the line was beautiful,
it's I felt. Beautiful, like, okay? It's the, fucking beautiful, okay? He's been with these stinky-ass dwarves and fighting goblins and shit, and finally there's a bit of peace that reminds him of home, okay?
And he can breathe some fresh air. He's like, oh, finally, not shit. But no, the line he says is beautiful, I believe. Like the one where he goes... I don't know what I'm more... I don't know if it's afraid or saddened by. The fact that I'm away from the Shire for so long. Or... No, it's fear. I don't know if I fear being from the Shire for so long. Or I fear coming... Not wanting to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, this is like... That was, to me, like the turning moment for him. Because he went from the Shire's all I need to... I love my Shire. The Shire is my home. That is my hometown. That is where I became me. But this world is so big and huge that it's doing a disservice to myself not to try and see it when I can. Especially when I'm given this opportunity to go on an adventure. And I was like, damn, that's fucking beautiful. So what did you like about the film?
All of it, okay? I loved all of it. Every single bit of it. It's a masterpiece. It's gold. No, okay. So anyway. Yeah, so I mean, like the animation was beautiful. I like the character design. The voice mm-hmm. acting was solid. I mm-hmm. do understand your complaints about the clunkiness and especially the pacing. The pacing was incredibly fast. Honestly, mm-hmm. this movie would have, like, even though Baron's my favorite, leave him out and give the film another 20 minutes. Make it an hour, mm-hmm. a solid hour and a half. And mm-hmm. I think it would have helped with the pacing a lot because...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just like the book, they don't get into the Battle of Five Armies because in the movie, he just turns invisible on the edge of the battlefield. Like, I'm not dealing with this shit.
Yeah.
In the book, he trips and actually gets knocked out. I mean, wakes up, the battle's over.
Mm-hmm.
So both the book and the movie don't do anything with the battle. It was only Peter Jackson who was like, you know what? I want a whole movie... Where I'm going to, like, have, like, literally the longest battle in any film.
It was dope in my mind.
Yeah, but I really think it honestly is like, the longest battle in film.
I think so, too, though.
I think it runs for a solid, like, 45 minutes.
No, it's... I remember when it starts, it's continuous. And, like, to the point, it kind of gets a little draining because you're like, oh,
you
my
get
God,
draining.
I need a break.
It's fantastic, okay? All of it's
perfect. No, I'm saying I like it. No. This is the thing. With the Peter Jackson films, I fell asleep because I was dead tired. My thing is, like, the reason I go, like, I am one of, like, I'm not in the camp where people are like, oh, the Hobbit movies ruined Lord of the... I went, like, I actually like them. I don't know why people are kind of hating on it. I think it comes from I haven't read the books. And I love Lord of the Rings, and I see it with a degree of separation. Oh, my God, I remember the one thing that also... Peter Jackson's film benefited from having Lord of the Rings before. It's actually a critical thing, and it's one of the reasons why I like the Peter Jackson film so much. Because of the timing of when it came out, correct me if I'm wrong, The Hobbit, when the movie came out, the books for Lord of the Rings have already been out for years and years, correct?
What are you talking about?
The Lord of the Rings books. The trilogy.
Like the actual book books?
Yeah, the actual book books.
The Hobbit came out before Lord of the Rings.
No. Yeah, but I mean The Hobbit movie, the one we're talking about. The
1970s. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
They've been out, right?
Yeah.
So the thing that bothered me that I felt like the Peter Jackson's film did better, and it's just something I had a critique of the movie in itself, because if I am correct, the same studio and everything continued to make more of these films, correct? Yeah. And made like The Lord of the Rings after.
Yeah, they made it's Lord of the Rings and Return of the King.
Yep. It's the fact... they didn't do Twin Towers.
Yeah, they kind of fit it in there. You know the pacing.
Oh, okay. They just put it in. Got it. The thing with it was, in the film, Gandalf is very aware of the ring Bilbo has. And this is where I'm like, if I'm misinterpreting something and I just don't understand it, please explain
it. You don't understand it, and I'll explain it to you as soon as you're done.
Got it. He's very okay with it. He's like, oh, you have a magic ring. He's like, I bet it rang to you. Like, he's hinting, I know you got the ring. But in The Hobbit, Bilbo tries to hide it, and it's when Gandalf finds out he has it, he's worried.
So the thing is, there are a bunch of magic rings and things like that, and not all of them are made by like Sauron and shit like that. So when he found out he had a magic ring, okay, you got to be careful with that kind of stuff because they have certain powers and they do certain things, and not all of them are known. Mm-hmm. He did not know it was the Ring of Power.
Okay.
Yes, it's not until afterwards, where you know, 50 or however so many years later, where Gandalf is talking to Bilbo and he realizes sort of like his behavior with it, and the way he's describing it, it's familiar to him. So he has to go back and do research, and he finds out that the description matches the Ring of Power, and he's like, "Oh shit, I gotta go warn Frodo."
Okay, that makes sense. You see, that makes sense to me. That's why.
So like,
I was like, "There's something."
Like Gandalf has a Ring of Power.
He does.
He does. It's the Ring of Fire given to him by I forgot the elf's name, Celebrimbor or whatever his name was, but yeah. So like, it's a gold ring. It's got a red ruby thingy in it, and it gives him the power to inspire others.
Oh. That's manipulative. Is that how he gets Bilbo to... Oh my god. Gandalf got slimier. Oh my god. That explains... I think this Hobbit movie, Peter Jackson did it wrong. He made him all like, I'm a good old man. Secretly, the other one was right. This creepy old man who just shows up at your door. You're going to want to be a burglar. Why? Look at this ring. You're burglar. Well, I mean, like,
both in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, he talks about how he has that ring.
Oh my god! It never realized me. He's a manipulative asshole.
It's not. It doesn't. You want to go on this adventure? Brainwash you. It helps people around you have courage.
Yeah, courage to do your chores.
And it does some other miscellaneous things, but yeah, that's one of the main things. Like they're not like it's not like, oh, frostbite, like some like D&D like, you know, artifact.
That's how I imagine it. When you said the Ring of Fire, I was like, is that how he's able to cast fireball or something like that?
No, it's more of like a symbolism thing.
Okay, gotcha. No. You made it sound like, not some bullshit symbolism thing. It's not cool.
You know I like explosions.
Explosions! No, I actually, like, I say this all in all, and I go, like, as someone who saw it as a kid and everything, I really enjoyed it. And I think it's, I think we're about to hit that time, Oscar, where we ask the hard question. Do you want to go first or me?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
All right, the hard question of what we ask in this segment is, does this hold up? It's a hard question because you have to think of it in the context of today, not in the context of when you first saw it or the context of how it came when it came out. We have to think of it in today's climate. If I show this to someone random, with the Peter Jackson movies existing, with the book itself existing, would I go and give this to them and go, this movie holds up? I personally think people should watch this movie. I personally think, especially if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, especially if you want a more, if you have a kid, you want to show it to them, show it to them. They're going to enjoy it. If you want to bring Tolkien's work, this whole just fantasy adventures in general, to people, show it to them. But you have to understand, it does not hold up, in my opinion, in today's standards of not just storytelling. And I'm not talking animation-wise, because I, like I said, character designs for the monsters, for Gollum, beautiful. Fucking Thor looking. Oh my god, the way he looks. I miss my sexy Thorn. He. But with the. My main thing is how quickly the movie moves and how clunky the dialogue and their actions move towards it. I don't feel it holds up today's standards. There's a lot of good in this. I keep mentioning Smaug and Bilbo scene. I actually really enjoyed the moments of. Like the music, like even if it's like dated, it is still good. Even though I do like Peter Jackson's Misty Mountain more, I think the music's good. I think the character, oh, can I? I forgot to mention the Elf King. I loved his design with the sparkling star crown.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was beautiful.
The one with the crown was Elrond.
Yeah, thank you, Elrond. I thought he looked better in this film than the other ones because it, in my mind, is like, this is a man of magic, of high elves. And even all the other ones, I thought their characters...
The wood elves look creepy as hell. They look like aliens.
I loved it. I liked it too, but
it was like a stark contrast to the other elves.
I enjoyed it because it actually shows a distinction between them in the sense of like, not just where they live, it's just more of like how they are. So it was like, okay, so if they're gonna, okay, that's cool. Like as a kid visually, I would be like, what else? I enjoy that. But I don't think it holds up, honestly. Ask, what do you think?
So I think it's a little dated, the music and then the way the animation is and all that, because nowadays cartoons need to take a little bit more risk. And are allowed to. But, like, I think in the perspective of my child, he would probably rather watch Lord of the Rings over this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he would get bored with this film, even though I still enjoy it as an adult. That's my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. But, like, would it hold up to a modern audience? No, it wouldn't, sadly.
Man, I'm sorry, man. I know you really wanted to see this one, and this was, like, the one you were looking forward to?
I was looking forward to it because I hadn't seen it since I was very young. And I was truly curious if it would still hold up. And, like, I still enjoyed it. I still had a good time.
That's good. That's perfect.
But, yeah, I mean, like, it. Like, if I was to, like I said, show it to my kid, he'd be bored. He'd be like, what the heck is this, Dad? Put on real Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But because, like, speaking of, you were talking about Sexy Thorn.
Go Oaken ahead.
Shield. The actor does the voice for Trevor Belmont in the Castlevania show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's dope. I legitimately did not know that.
Yeah.
Damn. Now I want to hear them side by side. That's really, really dope. Oh my god.
And he was also random Naboo guard number one in The Phantom Menace.
Oh, my favorite role. I knew that guard caught my attention. I was like, you know, that guard... He would look hot, like 4 feet shorter, and I bet his voice is just smooth as butter.
Yeah, he had no lines.
we all start somewhere, man. We all start somewhere, and he made it.
He did make it.
Man, The Hobbit. Oh, man. I don't know how to transition or anything, because I feel... Personally, like, this one, like, made me just, like, sad that I didn't think it held up, because I wanted to. But I'm going to be honest, it doesn't. I'm not going to, like, lie, but, man, I guess, Oscar, you transition us to what's next.
It's okay, actually, because there are tons of books, and this is a hard one for me,
mm-hmm.
just because when it comes to Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, I get very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I get more emotional, more so with Lord of the Rings, just because of the topics.
Yeah.
And so, like, I go back and I read the books, and my favorite one is the Children of Húrin. and it's a tragedy. So from the very beginning, it's made known that this is not going to have a good ending. It's not your fairy tale ending.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, they're cursed, and you know that it's, you know, a tragedy. So, and then, you know, the Silmarillion's like the Bible. It's hard to read, but there's so much beautiful world building and so many beautiful characters. And so, like, I want every adaptation to do well and, you know, be beautiful. And the movie still is. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's just a product of its time. It's animation. And they're not going to dump... This movie cost $3 million back in 1977.
Holy shit! That's a lot during that time.
Yeah, so they're not going to dump tons and tons of money into this. Like, before Star Wars, animation and all sci-fi and things like that, that was, you know, just... It was cheap stuff for kids. And it wasn't until Star Wars where they showed that merchandise and toys could be a big selling point... To where it changed the entire market, where every 80s cartoon was basically a toy line first or was made to sell toys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, this movie came out maybe a little too early. I think if The Hobbit would have came out maybe early 80s, they would have put a little bit more money into it because it was theatrical. And, maybe a series... You know, and you know, sold toys and things like that, they would have, you know, dumped more money into it. But then again, a lot of these shows later on, they were very cheaply made anyway. But, I'm conflicted with it a little bit. But the stories are near and dear to my heart, so I appreciate every adaptation.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'll still go back and read The Hobbit from time to time. Because it's a humbling story. And it makes me feel personally really good inside, if not a little sad, especially with the way the world is. And Thorne's last line of the book, though I cannot quote it because I have bad memory, is one that always hits me. Because he speaks of the war and everyone's greed in the world, and he wishes everyone could view the world like a hobbit.
Damn.
So, you know, it's more about being in the moment, at peace, and enjoying, you know, life in general. So I'll get the quote some other day, but yeah, that's basically...
I think I might have found it?
Sure.
Like, tell me if I'm right.
Mm-hmm.
Is it go, farewell, master burglar, go back to your books and your armchair, plant your trees, watch them grow. If more people valued home above gold... This world would be a merrier place.
That's it.
I think that's a good way to end this.
Yeah.
And time for the house cleaning. A smooth transition from something beautiful about truly treasuring your home above all things else and gold and straight into plugging all our stuff. Oh, man. And that we answer the question, does this hold up with The Hobbit? We have, my definitive answer was sadly no, and Oscars, I feel like it was a similar sentiment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorrowfully. But we are the Burnt Out Duo. Of course, I am Enrique Rosado, at Ryder Rosado, and that is with me is my Puerto Rican copy being Oscar Fernandez, at Oscar Farts, with a Z on Instagram. You can find me as well on Instagram and Twitter, but... We're the Burnt Out Duo. Who are we? Well, you can check us out on Instagram and Twitter at Burnt Out Duo. We're two comic creators, which we have comics out right now. What are they? It is Burnt Out Comics. Burnt Out Comics is an anthology series that you can find in our Instagram. And it's about like these crazy, wild stories that come to our mind that go on now. But if you want to, our Instagram is 6 months behind what you ask. Webtoon and Tapas, where you can find us there at Burnt, and the same name, Burnt Out Comics. Right now, we are running Bitter Souls with our fantastic, fantastic guest artist, Rikita Rosado, at Kita_draws on Instagram. She is working with us right now. Like, I wrote a story about some demons, some coffee, some deals, and going down right now. And you can catch, if this is timed right, We should be on the fourth part right now if you want to read it there.
I believe so.
It's going... Huh?
I believe so.
Ah, thank you. And that's what we have. But as well as if you want to read more webcomics, I have another one called Cat Trails. It is on Webtoon on Top Us as well. Magic fantasy adventure. Oscar, would you call it Scott Pilgrim meets the Hobbit?
if you were ever so fortunate.
Ah, that hurt. I'll make the pace clunkier for you. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I love you. And I'm not the only one with other stuff. I may have another webcomic, but Oscar, if I'm correct, you have an announcement.
No, I don't.
You told me. Oh, man. This is... people who heard the last week's episode are like, no, you said you had one. But okay, we'll just smooth transition into the next thing. So let's say you enjoyed what you liked. Well, make sure you please subscribe to the podcast. Follow the page you're listening to us. If you're on the audio platform, please definitely follow us. Any little bit helps liking the stuff. Thank you very much. But we do have a question for y'all. If you've seen the old Hobbit movies, do you think it holds up? If you've seen it, which one do you honestly think is better? Your interpretation. The 1977 version or the Peter Jackson's version?
That's I'm leaving the book out comparison. Because we know.
Is it an unfair? Are you trying to say it's unfair because Peter Jackson had a shit ton of money?
Yes.
But he did have... Is it unfair? He had 2 years to make three movies. Or did he have 3 years to make three movies?
He had to take his time with The Hobbit. The Lord of the Rings was filmed continuously all three in a row.
No. The Hobbit actually... Remember, you even know it. Like, Guillermo del Toro was supposed to originally do it, but then they sacked him.
Yeah,
and they brought back Peter Jackson. And they told him, you're working on the same timeline Guillermo del Toro was. He was like, oh, so I have that many years? They're like, no. Guillermo del Toro took this many months... You're starting from his starting point. So if he took 6 months, you have six months less to do everything.
You got
to
think of, like, it's a theatrical film. Lord of the Rings is known for being long as hell. So he was going to be given that time because people expected that long amount of time. So he had longer to flesh it out. He went from 2 to 3 films, higher budget, better technology. I mean, you can't really compare the two. If they were closer in time, then maybe. And if they're both live action... There is a live-action Hobbit, and we will never discuss it.
What?
Yep.
Oh, we will discuss it soon. I know what's going to be on our list.
Oh, hell no.
And if you enjoyed what we just said, check out our Patreon. What does our Patreon have? Well, we believe in providing the best we can and giving you stuff. So one example, we record warm-ups before all this. It's not stuff we didn't talk about The Hobbit or anything on there. They are literal warm-ups. We have to like do a little minute of talking before we jump into this. That way we're getting on our groove and everything. And you can catch those there. As well as both of the webcomics, Burnt Out Comics and Cat Trails, get released early on our Patreon before anywhere else. Mm-hmm. We want to give you that. As well as some behind-the-scenes look, like maybe some script pages, maybe some behind-the-scenes look of other stuff we're working on. You know, those things. And you can find that at Burnt Out Duo on Patreon. As well as, I think that is everything. Wouldn't you say, Austin?
I tagged us.
I tagged our socials. I tagged the webcomics. Your project got whoop.
Whoop.
And yeah. I think we're good. This is a great... I feel good, honestly. So why don't you just hit them with our famous catchphrase and we'll just all like spend our days looking at a bunch of butterflies above the trees.
That's what Bilbo Baggins hates.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm not going to lie, I didn't like that song.
You didn't like that song?
The Misty Mountain one still got me really good.
I like the Goblin Town one.
That one was I actually preferred that version than the Peter Jackson version.
Yeah, because I mean, it fit the mood Peter Jackson more. Version, the king kind of sings it for a second, but no.
No, and yeah, and this one, it fit the mood, it fit the tone. Perfect.
And with that.
And with that.